Good afternoon, folks, or whatever time you're listening to this episode. My name is Austin Williams, and this is Relevant Tones. We kicked off the episode by listening to a piece by Zach Browning. The name of the piece is Unrelenting Universe, and it was performed by the Coalescent Saxophone Quartet. I was excited to hear that they had released a new album, and I jumped on the opportunity, reached out to them. One, it's a fantastic album, and two, they are a fantastic group. So I had the opportunity to speak with three members of the ensemble about a variety of topics relating to the album, but also just in general, talking about Sax Quartet and their takes on where it exists within the, you know, the new music zeitgeist and all these things. So truly a smorgasbord of topics relating to the saxophone. So if you are a big saxophone nerd, this is definitely the episode for you. And if you are not a big saxophone nerd, you might learn something. So Without further rambling, I would like to present an interview with the Coalescent Quartet, and I hope you enjoy. Thanks.
All right. So, yeah, I'm Drew White. I'm the baritone, saxophonist, and Coalescent Quartet, and I'm living and working in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
I'm Nick Zulik. I'm the tenor saxophonist in Coalescent, and I live in Chicago.
I'm Nate Bogert. I'm the soprano saxophonist with Coalescent Quartet, and I live currently in Muncie and moving myself soon to Indianapolis, so central Indiana.
There we go. And
member is Michael Schultz, who's from Memphis, but at the moment he's rehearsing for a different gig, a concerto with a former student of his from UW-Eau Claire.
Yes. So that's actually a fun connection I have with the ensemble, is that I saw you guys perform. I think people who listen to the show know this by now, but you guys might not know. I'm an alumni from UW-Eau Claire. And I think I saw you guys perform, 2015, 2016, I want to say.
At the Lakely? Was it in, or
was that when did the Coalgrass?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, cool. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. It was before Nate joined the group. Yeah. And that was our first concerto.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. That was my introduction to you guys. So it was very cool to see. I'd never seen, I don't know. At that point in my life, I don't know if I've really seen like an ensemble concerto, so to speak. I think the only thing I'd seen that was close was like the whatever that Schumann piece is for four horns and orchestra. But that was a very cool experience to see a like chamber group juxtaposed against a larger ensemble. Not something you see every day. And that was just a cool piece too. The Coalgrass is a very awesome work. So that's kind of my fun connection to the group. And then I got to know Nick in Chicago. And, of course, Michael Schultz was at Eau Claire when he was professor there. So, that's kind of that connection that I have to the group. And, I wanted to get you guys on. I guess just, like, my first maybe good talking point is how did you guys meet? Because you're kind of all over the place right now. But where was, like, the beginning?
Yeah, we're all over the place. And there was a moment where everyone in the group was in Wisconsin, but this current formation of the group, it's been what, five years?
I think so.
Yeah. So
right before right when the pandemic started.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But initially we formed it down in Texas, in Lubbock, Texas.
Really?
Yeah. We were there for a saxophone conference. And all of us, of course, are friends, very passionate about classical saxophone. And I think most importantly, we're passionate about the different voices that the saxophone has, whether that's, you know, classical, jazz, really any genres. We love the instrument and love pushing boundaries in the repertoire, of course, commissioning new works and things like that. So down in Lubbock, Texas, four of us got together. And at that point, it was myself, Drew Whiting, Noah Evan, and Sumner Truax. And we just had this goal of bringing together different voices from different places in the saxophone community and seeing, what we can bring together through our differences in terms of approach to the instrument. And that's really carried through no matter the configuration of the ensemble. I think even now, of course, all of us do so many things in saxophone, but we all have our different specialties. But I think one of the most unique things about the group is that none of us share a teacher or a studio lineage or anything like that. We all studied with completely different folks, took very different paths in saxophone. And I think we all see that as a strength. And from a very personal standpoint, that keeps me motivated, keeps me learning, examining, how I approach the horn. And it's a huge motivating factor.
Yeah, I think Nick, for one really important detail is that we formed over margaritas.
Oh, yeah, that is the
I think that really needs to be said.
Torchy's Margaritas in Lubbock, Texas,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. So I just want to make sure that important piece of information got out there.
Oh, that is awesome. Yes, that is very important. If we want to jump into it and just mention, you guys have released a new album, maybe relating to what we just talked about, maybe what are some of the different styles, or like what, I think a question I had is like, how did you choose some of the programming on the album? Because it's not all like new works necessarily. They've all been composed in the, you know, 21st century, but like they're not, some of them are, you know, almost or about a decade old. So I was curious how the programming was decided for the album.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a result of some different connections and collaborations kind of through that. So I know a lot of us had connections to some of these different composers. So for instance, Zach Browning, I did my DMA at University of Illinois, and that I took Zach Browning's pop music theory class. Mm-hmm. And like I've known Zach for a while. And so when he had this new quartet, Unrelenting Universe, he had written it for a quartet in the UK. And it hadn't been from the US, and he just sent it to me. And I was like, hey, I got a quartet. We'll give it a read. And we ended up really enjoying that. I know if we're like with Chen Yi, Michael Schultz has that connection through UMKC. The other works, we got on the consortium for the Martin Bresnik quartet. And that was headed by Prism Quartet, but we got on that one to be a part of that. You have the connection with Emma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just as friends, having commissioned her previously, and also, I mean, I think her writing is fantastic. All the composers on the album are great, but yeah, that was the connection there. And then with Evan Williams, both Michael and I had some connections to him. For me, it was from Bowling Green State University. But Evan eventually, or for a time, was living and teaching and composing in Memphis. Where he and Michael became good friends.
I think he went to CCM too, right?
That's right.
Michael was at CCM for a bit.
You're absolutely
for his master's degree. Yeah.
So it's kind of this culmination of connections, friends, you know, made over time, and this, you know, I guess the singularity or this congruency of it all. Yeah, fantastic. Well, I really enjoyed listening to it, and. I texted Nick last week because I was like, hey, congrats on the new album. Your PR firm is doing its job. So,
but we're happy with that. Actually, there is a something we should mention there. Both Drew and I had worked with Philip Blackburn previously, mm-hmm. and we were excited to work with him again on this. So yeah, we're really grateful for everything that Philip was able to do with Numa Records. Just putting the album together and getting it out into the world.
And was he the producer or mixer for it?
So he's the owner operator of Numa Records. Okay. And so we actually brought in a couple different folks for producing. Because we had Paul Lorenz, mm-hmm. Who's one of the producers, as well as, Hunter. Hunter Baca, previously of Noise Quartet. It was really great having both of them on, but the whole album was recorded at Ball State. And so we really have Nate to thank for that connection. His Jeff Seitz was the recording engineer on it. He just did
excellent,
masterful, amazing.
Yeah. It's good to get with the folks here. Well, cool. Yeah. And again, you're just, you're working with more people in the fam for producing it as well. So, yeah, great. I'm terrible at remembering specific tunes, but I remember it's the last track on the album actually that stood out to me, Night Music. And please forgive me and remind me who is the composer for that piece?
Yeah, that's Emma O'Halloran's piece, Night Music. Yeah, phenomenal work, and thankfully that's become I'd almost say a standard in saxophone repertoire. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting to think about because the piece is only a little over 10 years old, I think, right?
Probably been recorded well because Prism Quartet as well as Noise have also recorded it. So I think it's really getting a lot of play in our community, and it's just a great piece of music.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
see like the, I guess like, do you see the sax quartet becoming just that much more codified in the like zeitgeist of like classical music, or like it's always been there for new music, quote unquote, because it is a relatively newer instrument, but I see a new sax quartets popping up left and right, and they're all just like fantastic quality, and it's fantastic, you know, it's really cool.
I guess I would say that I think the quality, to your point, I mean, I think that's exactly the reason that you see it popping up more and more, is because groups have been really, you know, busting their hump to sort of get to that level of you know, execution that you think of when you think of those really famous string quartets or brass quintets or, you know, woodwind quintets. I mean, even if we think outside the sphere of, you know, academia and the competitions that exist with people of that, those age brackets, where I think, I mean, it's just a fact at this point that saxophone has kind of taken over that scene. Yeah. As far as just, if you look at the past winners of MTNA and all these things, I mean, saxophone quartets have just gained a lot of visibility there. And then, you know, different from our group, a lot of these groups spawned from that, you know, that they were doing the rounds with chamber competitions and things, and then they kind of branched out into their own professional sort of identity, and that's been really nice to see. And I think those accolades certainly helped, but more than that, I think it's been the quality of the music that's been coming out in the genre, you know. I mean, it's just so many good, I mean, the music we recorded notwithstanding, I mean, there's 20 albums worth of great saxophone quartets written in the last 10 years. So
yeah,
I think that's been part of it, that we're starting to be codified on the larger scale, but that's, I think it's really a testament to the hard work of people in the community, not only, you know, raising the level of playing, but also raising the level, and I think this is maybe the key, is raising the level of collaboration to commission composers from all across the spectrum, you know, which has resulted in just so many great pieces.
Well, I remember like when I was studying, you know, comp in undergrad and becoming interested in the ensemble, or the idea of writing for the ensemble, and all the literature available to me on like any form of like multiphonics or just like good sax writing, it was all like in French. It was all like really guarded and not well documented. And so I remember going to Michael Schultz and be like, where do I go? What's a good resource? And he helped me out a little bit, but it was still like kind of a struggle. And this was only back, I don't know, 2014, 2015. So 10 years ago. So I think in the last decade, I myself have seen a huge improvement on, you know, documentation and, you know, all that stuff regarding the writing for the ensemble.
Yeah, I mean, I think the continued, you know, evolution of tech has really helped with that too, you know, because one of the primary resources people use for all of the techniques that composers can write for on saxophone, now a lot of those resources, and I'm thinking of one in particular, it doesn't matter which one it is, but they include, you know, audio samples for composers, and they include the information about this works at soft dynamics, this works at forte dynamics, you know, that kind of thing, which that's really made the process of collaborating with composers. It's not perfect, obviously, but it's certainly much more efficient than it was in the past, where I think it was more of a hodgepodge of like, what can the performers that person's working with, what can they do? And what do they feel comfortable doing? And now it's really branched out into a much more informed point of view.
Yeah.
And so the composers, I think, have felt a lot more comfortable engaging with that kind of writing, which is great, because I think it just is further affirmation that, you know, the saxophone is a really versatile instrument and can do a lot of really cool things.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's what comes to mind, just hearing everything you're saying, Nate, which I totally agree with. The saxophone quartet is just naturally such a homogenous ensemble, right? But then, of course, the saxophone as an instrument is relatively young if you compare that to other members of, you know, the wind ensemble world or definitely the orchestral world. And I think along with that, there's a spirit of experimentation that always comes with the instrument, but there's always a curiosity and admiration for the past. And with the saxophone being so versatile, I think we all see folks constantly trying to adapt different things and just find different ways for the saxophone's voice to function. But there's no question that the quartet setting, there's something special about that setup. And I think, you know, to Nate's point with competitions, there's been a lot of positive momentum for saxophone quartet from that. And I think it's expanding even further.
Yeah. I'd probably just add that I think one of the things I always just I think about with the saxophone anytime we present ourselves is that, you know, the saxophone is, while we're a young instrument, we're a very familiar instrument. I mean, it's just like, if you listen to pop music, you know what a saxophone is. But with that, you know, so you have this kind of preconceived notion of it, but then all of a sudden you see a high level saxophone quartet and they're breaking all those expectations right away. And I think that's a really inviting thing. You go into something with an expectation or familiarity, and then once that changes, that just invites growth, that invites curiosity with it. And so I think that's one thing we really benefit from, actually, is like there is this expectation, but we continually break it and we continually grow from that.
I think like, and I also think it comes from like the performers that were, you know, using the instrument as their tool for composing and what have you. Like I think of like Anthony Braxton and so many other folks from like Tricentic Foundation, and you know, of course, you know, all the, you know, you could cite Coltrane and all those guys, but you know, the spirit of experimentation, I think, is at this point, speaking of codification, like it is in my brain, like that's what I think of, like for people who, you know, pursue saxophone professionally. I always, to me, and maybe it's a bad assumption, but I kind of infer that they're willing to, or that they're curious about what their instrument can do, you know.
You know, one of the things I've been, you know, throughout the course of the 30 years I've been playing is even more, I think, and this is just my experience, but I think mm-hmm. even more shocking to people that the saxophone can do, you know, if we talk about multiphonics and percussive sounds and things that are associated with more new music, we'll just use that as an umbrella term. My experience has been that people are often even more shocked at how beautiful the saxophone can be.
Yeah.
So they like, because of, you know, what Drew was saying, people come in and it's like their reference point is Gerald Albright or Boney James or Coltrane or Charlie Parker. And that's, I don't mean that in any kind of positive or negative way. It's just, that's their frame of reference. And then they come into a concert saxophone setting and you play something, that's melody based, and the homogeneity of a saxophone quartet or even just saxophone and piano, I think really surprises people that, oh, this is just as beautiful as a flute sonata or a violin sonata or, you know, any other instrument that they associate with, you know, classical music or concerts, you know, any kind of new music. I think, so that's always really fun for me is when you play and people, you know, they come up and they're, you know, oh, wow, I had no idea the saxophone could sound like that.
Yeah.
And you've just finished playing, you know, some aria or something. And it's like, I didn't do anything to break the mold here or shock you, but with like the more sort of ostentatious side of the saxophone, but just how warm it can sound, how beautiful it can be. I think that really surprises people. And I love our album for that. I think that is a really unique quality of the album is that I think there's just such a nice potpourri, if you will, of moments, you know, that display kind of so many different sides of the instrument and of the individual members of the group, you know, the individual saxophone voices. You know, I think that is a really special quality of the album and something that sort of in a strange way sort of ties into what I was just saying. So I've always been surprised that other people are surprised how beautiful saxophone can sound. But I have to, you know, take a step back and go, well, you know, I live with it every day. Whereas a lot of people have never heard concert saxophone in any context. So, right. You know, I just hope that people walk away from the album and they enjoy it, you know. And one thing I would say that, not to circle back to a previous thing, but, you know, you talked about like choosing the repertoire and all that. And I think a point that I would add is, you know, it's all music that we really, really believe in, you know, that we really love. And I think the four of us are very resolute in that, you know, that we want to record and commission and perform music that we really believe in and that we really love. And we're not really engaged with the, like, keeping up with the Joneses or like, well, this did this, and so we need to do that. And, it, you know, because I just don't think any of us really have any interest in doing that. It's more about we want to put together programs that provide a particular experience for an audience. And so I think I just wanted to add that point that we picked it not because it was of a certain – it didn't check any boxes. It's just music that we really believe in and that we really love and that we enjoy playing together.
Well, then I think it also like comes off as authentic as well. And I totally get that, you know, in the recordings, you know, everything's is, you know, I don't have a ton of reference, but like, I could tell like there's a lot of like personality and like intent with a lot of the music I was listening to. And of course you're only going to do that with stuff that you quite frankly care about, or you're going to, you know, personalize to an extent.
Absolutely. And I kind of add on to that to say that one of the great things about the group is because we come from these different backgrounds, we come from different experiences. Just, you know, Nick will say, hey, we checked this piece out. Or Nate say, hey, here's something. And the great thing is like we have this kind of plethora of knowledge because it's not we're all coming from one place. We're all coming from different places. So then our options, you know, almost seem limitless. And I think the creativity of that really comes out. That's, I think that's a huge strength of the group.
Mm. Yeah, it's such a... You know, Nick was talking about like growing and staying motivated and learning in the context of the group. And I think, you know, just speaking for myself, I mean, that every time we're together, I walk away with a giant playlist of like, okay, I need, because, you know, if we talk about, I don't even necessarily mean it in the sense of factions, but, you know, when we talk about the fact that we all studied with different people and come from different branches of this tree, you know, repertoire is the same way. Like this sort of group of people tend to, you know, use this body of repertoire for pedagogical, artistic reasons. And that obviously there's always overlap, but it can be really starkly different from branch to branch. And I, you know, I've just so much enjoyed and appreciated and been humbled by learning about a lot of music that I was a complete blind spot for me, even as a saxophonist. And so that's just, I'm only saying that because I enjoy that part of it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
same
all around.
I would love to talk maybe about the residency you're doing right now, and a little bit that, because it sounds like you're doing some a cool performance there. But is there anything else about the album you care to mention before we move on?
I mean, we're really excited to keep sharing it now that it's out in the world. This coming season, we have some things that are in, you know, in the pipeline and all of that. I think we're all especially excited about making it down to Memphis soon. We have some shows planned down there. But yeah, just the current residency. So at the moment we're at University of Wisconsin Oshkosh, and we'll play Philip Glass's concerto for saxophone, and this arrangement is for saxophone quartet and wind ensemble. Cool. As opposed to strings. And even just thinking about this spring, we've had some exciting things. We were just at Ball State.
For New Music Festival.
And premiered Amy's piece, which was phenomenal. And I think that's the interesting thing with our group. We are spread apart, right? I'm in Illinois. We have Wisconsin represented, Tennessee and Indiana. And it, you know, it takes some effort to get us all together and rehearse, but we've all made that commitment to keep that happening and to try to be part of all of our individual communities and see what we can bring together. So, you know, this residency that we're doing right now is a great representation of that. I think most of what we're doing, it's usually, about trying to join the communities together in different ways.
I'll say this one came about last year. We were presented with an opportunity to play actually a different concerto. We were trying to work out something with UWO and like another school who wanted to play a concerto by Viet Quang that we were excited about, but then we couldn't quite make all parties, you know, come to get on the same page. But I said, well, I still want to do this, and especially because I always love getting guests up for our students to interact with. And anytime we can get other professional musicians in front of our students, that is always a golden opportunity. So it was like, great, I can get, you know, my quartet up here and we can do this collaboration. Also part of it is we got a new piece from one of my colleagues, John Mayrose, quartet called Emergency. And so we're gonna be playing that at our show on Saturday, but also actually tomorrow after our rehearsal, we're gonna perform that work for the composition students here. And John's going to talk about his compositional process with that. So, you know, everything kind of folds into each other. You know, it's not just the, okay, here's the gig. You know, this is, it's the gig with the people that we know, and this is who we're going to, you know, commission for our next pieces. Like when we were down at New Music Festival, getting that piece from Amy Kaplan, like that's, you know, when we go out and do these performances, like there's always this extra degree of connectivity, and not only just, you know, within us, but also the place and the people that we're with.
Fantastic.
We certainly work with people who we care about, whose artistry we care about, but yeah, we're constantly trying to expand that outward.
Yeah.
And one thing we should mention relate to this album, and I think it also kind of shows just expanding the family and how that came together. So as I mentioned, we're all in different states. So often a rehearsal retreat is just, you know, reserving an Airbnb or something like that. For this album, we went out to Avalok Farms and we were there for 2 weeks to really do the heaviest lifting of putting this together. And that was just such a beautiful experience, I think, for all of us to be in a completely different setting that's so isolated from, you know, all the normal everyday problems, even like cooking and all of that. Like,
the food at Avalok is with it. We all walked away heavier.
but then while we were there, I mean, it was exactly what Nate just said with just expanding the family and just connecting with more people and having the same passion and enthusiasm for the saxophone as you can, like Drew mentioned with the margaritas and all of that. I think you can hear how we get going with saxophone stuff, and you can imagine what that is with margaritas. And for us, that's fun. I don't know how it would be for anyone else, but.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, just always trying to expand that family.
I was going to say, it's hard for me to think of a time in which Coalescent was in a place for more than one day where we didn't walk away with a potential project with a new person, you know, whether it be a conductor who wants to have us come and play with their group, or whether it be a composer, you know, speaking of Avalok, I mean, we even premiered a piece that was written during the 2 weeks while we were there.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Wow.
From a composer out of Montreal. And then, when we played Dave Biedenbender's piece at Ball State is when Amy Kaplan approached us about writing a piece. All these things, like, they just keep, you know, when we were in Memphis and we played Coalgrass, like, then some gigs came from a performing arts center.
Yeah.
That were just are finally starting to materialize, but it's really that not just showing up, playing the gig, and going back to your Airbnb and then moving on to the next thing. I think we really, because of the fact that we're separate a lot of the time, the fellowship component of it is super important, and that fellowship sort of expands to everyone who's kind of around us in these different settings. And that has resulted in some really, really wonderful collaborations. And it just keeps, as it keeps going, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. You know, I mean, the network gets bigger, and for me, the appreciation of this thing just deepens much more, you know, that we've done 4 or 5 concertos in the last 4 or 5 years. It just seems like it's really, you do the first one and it just snowballs, you know, which we're really grateful for. I think that, you know, as we continue down the road, we just look forward to collaborating with more people. I mean, and one thing I would say that I really love is that there's no, we're not trying to stick to a particular thing when it comes to like style of music or composition type, or, you know what I mean? Like we've even done mixed concerts where we did some solo stuff, we did some quartet stuff, we did music with electronics, solo, and then a quartet play on the same gig. You know, I mean, it's just, it really is a group of people just getting together who love to perform and love to be together and just share. So that's my one of my takes on the whole thing anyway. So
totally. No, that tracks. That totally tracks, and it is a snowball, right? You know, you get one thing going, and then if you let it ride, it kind of, and it goes well, and it's, you know, as long as you're, what is it? You have to be, 2 of the 3 things. I think it should be all 3: is on time, a good person, and a good musician. You know, I think like that's part of it though. It's like just being a homie, being a good person. It speaks so much to, you know, the process of. You know, creating the art that you're working on together.
The hang is important.
Yeah,
it's very, very important.
Well, hey, awesome guys. This has been a treat. Really, it's really good to hear from the quartet. It's kind of one of those cool full circle moments for myself, seeing you guys perform years ago, and now, you know, talking to you and you know, seeing where you're at now, and it's all good. Is there anything else we want to mention before we sign off here?
Go listen to the album. And I think you know, all 4 of us have individual projects out there in the world that if you're just curious about kind of the diversity of viewpoint, the diversity of approach, that's one thing I think is really special too, is that people can, like, you know, seek us out as individuals and get to know a little bit more about us, and then hear it all come together you know, in the quartet. So
excellent.
Thank you.
hope you enjoyed my interview with the Coalescent Quartet. Just a truly lovely gaggle of guys there, and really enjoy their mission and only hope the best. I hope the residency that they were invited to at Oshkosh, rounded out very nicely, and they continue to produce more stuff. That being said, if you're a composer and have a piece, they're very eager, so they're very approachable, so you could probably DM one of the individual members on Instagram or other socials, or find them in some other way. But I think they're certainly open to working with composers. So if that is you, definitely give it a shot. This is your reminder that Relevant Tones is a product of Access Contemporary Music. Find out more at acmusic.org, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks, guys.